The NO Bio, the ultimate Saints podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
Joining us now is Kevin Skiver from the Canal Street Chronicles, part of the SB Nation family. You can find him on Twitter at SaintsCSC. And Kevin, you're not exactly bullish on the Saints' chances after their loss last night.
I can't say that I am. I'm just looking at history. Historically, teams that start 0-3 have a 2.8% chance of making the playoffs, which doesn't really bode well because there's a lot of NFL history. So
2.8? Is that what you said?
Yeah, 2.8.
That's bad.
It's definitely not great. It's not ideal. So last night was pretty much the earliest in the season that you could have a must-win game, and it just didn't come through.
Drew Brees threw for 376 yards, three touchdowns, still not enough. The Saints now, they score 32 points. You think you'll at least be close and you score 32 points. They're giving up 33-plus a game, and they're riddled with injuries as well. How do they find a way to get this better? Is there anything they can do except wait it out?
Right now, it really just feels like all they can really do is play the waiting game. I mean, Dennis Allen's scheme isn't overly complicated, and they brought in a couple of veterans to try to help out. They brought in Paul Kruger. Danielle Allaby has been hurt. They brought in Craig Robertson from the Browns as well. And those guys have played okay. Paul Kruger hasn't looked good. Danielle Allaby has been hurt. Craig Robertson's really the big guy that's come through for them. But with injuries to the secondary, Damian Swan and P.J. Williams, two guys who were highly touted and who played very well, for the stats that they were in, both had concussion problems. Delvin Bro has a broken fibula. First-round pick Sheldon Rankins also has a broken fibula. So right now you just got to try to be patient with the defense and try to survive through the time without them, which they haven't done so far.
Well, it's fascinating about Kruger. You know, this guy's been a veteran. It's been around a while. This is his eighth year, and he's been very good at spots. But it seems to be the transition from the 3-4 to the 4-3 that's tripping him up.
It's possible. Dennis Allen runs a lot of multiple fronts. He runs a lot of 3-4 and a lot of 4-3. He just does it based on personnel. Paul Kruger was obviously a weak side rusher for a lot of his time with the Ravens and the Browns. It's just that he hasn't translated well to the Saints defense, and he hasn't been able to get the pressure that they wanted. He was supposed to come in and replace Hauli Kikaha opposite Cam Jordan and just hasn't been able to do it, hasn't been able to generate pressure. And part of that is a lack of an interior pass rush. Tyler Davidson was also out last night, and they were trying to rely on John Jenkins, who was another draft bust that they had. Ever since Jeff Ireland has come on, they've been drafting defensive heavy. They've had a heavy focus on defensive guys, and they've been dealing with injuries from those guys. They've been dealing with all sorts of stuff. So they're just kind of hoping that these guys pan out once they come back or are able to come back at all.
The injuries, of course, are one problem, and then it gets compounded with mental mistakes. There was a part in the game very early, the first drive of the game for the Falcons, the debilitated Saints defense forces a three and out. You have a punt. Looks like maybe things are going to go well. They're already up 7-0. Instead, you have two guys collide. There's a fumble. Atlanta gets the ball, goes in for a touchdown, and now this game has completely and totally changed. These are the kind of things, at least you think, are correctable as opposed to the injuries. How do the Saints go ahead and make those kind of changes as well so they don't make these mental errors that make the physical errors stand out even more?
Yeah, that just comes down to discipline. That comes down to special teams. Eric Harris is a rookie from Canada this year. He was a guy who was heavily talked about at safety, and he just ran into Tommy Lee Lewis. There's really no way around it. I mean, it's just a huge mistake. It debilitates the young defense that finally has confidence after making a stop first time in the game, and it just ruined any type of momentum the Saints had after the opening scoring drive. You're thinking, okay, if Tommy Lee Lewis fields this punt, you drive down the field, you maybe get a field goal, make it a two-possession game. Instead, Atlanta immediately turns it around, scores seven. They went on a streak where they scored five touchdowns in five drives, then kicked a field goal. to round it out. So there's just no excuse for that type of mental mistake. There's no excuse to make a mistake like that. And it absolutely debilitates a defense that already isn't overly confident going in and is very young. And frankly, vacillates a lot between being confident and being completely crippled.
All right. So a lot of gloom and doom going on. The defense is beat up. There's not much going there. Special teams is making dumb mistakes. But the offense is going pretty well, right? There's got to be some sort of silver lining that the Saints fans can hang on to.
Yeah, Drew Brees is still Drew Brees. Drew Brees is still making plays, and he proliferates the ball really well to a lot of different guys. Even with Willie Snead hurt, didn't affect him that much last night. Michael Thomas stepped up big. He made a lot of good plays. He's looking like a really good second-round pick. And guys like Mark Ingram, he went out and finally got some carries. He only had 9 carries for 30 yards against the Giants. He comes back against the Falcons, and he actually got touches. And when Ingram gets touches, he makes plays. He's a very tough runner. So when you get those guys involved in the game and let your stars be stars, then you're able to succeed. The offense can be a little bit quick at times. They're a little bit they were a little bit up-tempo last night. And when you compound that with the up-tempo style that Atlanta ran for a lot of the game last night, it tires out your defense. But at the end of the day, if you score 32 points, then you need to be in that game. And frankly, you need to win that game. And there's really no excuse for that. But the offense is still a bright spot. The offense is still making plays. And so it's good to see Brees still able to hit guys like Michael Thomas and Brandon Cooks. And it was also good to see Kobe Fleener, the Saints' big free agent signing, get involved last night. He had over 100 yards. He ran that steam play to the middle, what felt like 20 times. And just he shredded the Falcons' defense doing that. So there are good things to be seen. And that was without Terron Armstead, the left tackle, who was also out last night. And the protection was still solid against a weak Atlanta pass rush.
Well, now they play a Chargers team that is suffering with plenty of injuries of their own. You're talking about Danny Woodhead out for the season, Keenan Allen out for the season. Some of their big weapons are gone. If you're looking at this from the Saints' perspective, you're headed to San Diego. It's not the fast track out there. Maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. But this might be a Charger team where they might be able to get moving a little bit because they're not quite as explosive as they were without those two guys. What do the Saints need to do differently to make sure they stay in this game and maybe steal one on the road?
Well, the Saints need to keep their defense off the field as much as they possibly can. They need to limit the mental mistakes. You're absolutely right. It feels like we're having this conversation about San Diego every year. There's always key injuries for them, and Phillip Rivers always feels like he's playing with patchwork, but That defense is susceptible to being scored on. Saints are obviously going to put up points in bunches, but they need to jump out early on that team. They need to try to put them in a hole early, and they need to do it often. Because once you get that defense in the later stages of the game, they start to get tired. They start to get worn down. That's when you see those long drives like we saw last night against Atlanta. San Diego is a very beatable team. They're a team that the Saints can get their first win against. It's just an issue of making sure that you stay patient, stay true to your game plan, and try to limit those mental mistakes.
So the Saints try to dig out of that hole 0-3. Maybe they get it done this week, but the person to follow, Kevin Skiver, Canal Street Chronicles, part of the SB Nation family, and at Saints CSC is the guy to pay attention to. And Kevin, thank you very much for your time today. Soon, you know, we'll talk later in the season, and I guarantee you, they will have at least one win.
Sounds good to me. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you very much. Kevin Skiver again at Saints CSC. Go ahead and follow him on Twitter. We'll be back in just a moment with the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames. And then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona. And you can always talk about that going from the, you know, quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald in that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really, that the Houston Texans – off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett in his very first start showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. You know, we all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. And it's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at blunt. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. And it seemed like almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team in the playoffs can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, you know, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully, because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know the fans in Buffalo and everything, they've got that little bit of chip on their shoulder, and I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo, and if you're Rex Ryan, And now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last eight division titles. And they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they had Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates a, we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC, where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings, who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in three things: defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They had eight starters that were our former first or second round draft pick. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of a gimmicks or anything you have to overcome, but it seems to me like this is maybe to an extent a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year, with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost one regular season game last year. They've already lost two. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's pretty lofty bar. You know, to win two games. So, oh my God, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of a less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, it keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportion. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example. You look at the game. Drew Brees feels like if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old, in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, it's just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then and Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was the defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach, and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today?
Oh,
hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
You know, better option, here's the difference. You had Brock, who was more physical than Peyton, and Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most – the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had six starts. So physically, and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman, but does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy, but the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. they can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make it go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner than Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo is actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentzes and Dak Prescott that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fisher is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in. But as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But Goff's – I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run, but this is probably the best thing because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe. But as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of the game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially if the season rolls on in a cold weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, they're not. It's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it. A lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise. But it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, they'll be lucky to win six or seven games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen, they're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it, bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, when he is taking some hits, and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? And after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense, should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend. And if you can't get out of bounds and it's third and three and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running slash passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team becomes that team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. And I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.